Welcome to Snooze with Sam. Scottish sleep stories, mindfulness and meditations, and all the other stuff in between. I'd like to thank you all for your feedback and your ideas regarding stories after the posts I put out. I really do appreciate it. Like I said in the post and also in the wee video, I'm not out of ideas, far from it, but it does matter to me that you, the listeners, the people who support me doing this, are receiving actual, active responses to the things that you want to hear. I know that's how, hopefully, you feel like you matter as listeners, because you do, and I want to show everyone that they do. As I've said to many of you in replies, I know it's a lot of energy and effort for you to spill out your hearts and brains when it comes to this, but I can assure you it's all being taken on board, and you will see the results of that. We're still a small channel, and I still give everybody the time that they deserve, especially those who put so much effort into sharing their thoughts. So rest assured, none of it has gone to waste, and everything that everyone said has been taken on, and ultimately the common denominators will be used. So do expect much more history, much more fantasy adventure, maybe a few other little themed things such as Outlander, or maybe some time travel. Don't worry though, if you're still just a fan of scenic tours and visualizations of the Scottish wilderness and adventures, that will always continue, I promise you. So this week, I would like to take you on a journey through some of Scotland's islands. We delve into a little of their history, a little of their current state, some of my own memories of these places, and just why they are so special in the first place. So, if you are quite ready, as always, lie back, take a nice deep breath, and enjoy this story. There's an indefinable magic about islands. Even otherwise ordinary places are transformed by a feeling of something else when you have to cross the sea to reach them. Islands are places apart, away from the commonplace. Places where we leave our normal lives behind. Just think of the words that we commonly associate with them. Island escape. Island adventure. Treasure Island, or Island Paradise. And nowhere is this truer than the islands of Scotland, though of course I'm not biased. Being from one and having grown up on one of the most scenic islands of all. They possess some of the finest mountain and maritime landscapes in Europe. The variety in such a compact area is immense. From the large and fertile fields of Orkney to the barren peatlands of Lewis and Harris. From the sandy beaches of Tyree and to the often mentioned mountain ranges of the Coolins on Skye, an area I know particularly well. There are endless layers of human history to uncover too. The remarkably preserved Stone Age settlements such as Scarabray or Jarlsoff, the long area of Norse rule. Of course, the richness of Gaelic culture and the human tragedy of the clearances. Then there's the sheer diversity of natural history. Dolphins, whales, otters, and some of the most spectacular seabird colonies to be found anywhere in the world. Many people, understandably, start with a visit to one of the better known islands, Skye, Arran, or perhaps even Mull. They all make wonderful experiences to remember. Once you've been to one island, the mind begins to wonder what the neighbouring islands are like. And what about the ones beyond them? This is something I can truly, personally testify to. I may have been a resident, an explorer of Skye for most of my life, but this certainly doesn't stunt my curiosity for every other island that this nation has in its possession. My curiosities have taken me to the far and beyond in search of that special something that only islands seem to give. And the beauty is that all these islands are different. If you enjoy taking trips, exploring and discovering different islands for yourself, and who wouldn't, then Scotland has a full collection just waiting to be discovered. the Isle of Arran. Often described as Scotland in miniature, Arran offers a remarkable variety of activities and scenery in a relatively compact island package. From atmospheric, prehistoric stone circles to challenging mountain walks, which rank amongst the most spectacular in the Scottish Hills. All encircled by a fine coast of sandy beaches, caves, and high cliffs. Of course, there are also an abundance of cultural sites. The wildlife, whisky, which I am a fan of, and the quality local produce from this unique island, which is also home to 4,000 people. Arran is very accessible from Glasgow, making it a popular weekend destination all year round. From the mainland, at a place called Ardrossan, you can take the ferry. The crossing takes, I think, if I can remember, around about 45 minutes, spanning a lovely scenic stretch of open water with Arran stood alone on the horizon beckoning you closer. The first thing you see when crossing the water is the impressive towering structure of Goat Fell. As the highest mountain on Arran, at 874 metres, Goat Fell is also one of the easier peaks to climb amongst Arran's granite mountain ridges. The ascent can be rewarded with superb views all around, even reaching Ireland on the clearest of days. The most straightforward ascent is from near Brodick. The out and back route from there can be completed in a decent half a day if you're feeling sprightly. But if you really want to push yourself, there's actually a race that takes place every year in May called the Goat Fell Race. And these fastest runners complete the course in under an hour and a quarter. There are a number of other ways up, including routes that take in some other dramatic peaks seen from the summit. Quite a few of them require a bit of scrambling, so you need to be prepared to involve your hands as well. You might also be lucky enough to spot some of the island's wild goats on your climb. And you'd be right in thinking that the mountain may have taken its name from this word, or more likely from a Norse derivative of goat, which is geta. But not only goats. You can keep your eyes peeled for buzzards. Not that they're difficult to spot, they are everywhere. But the rarer golden eagle, also a common yet no less majestic sight on the slopes. If you want to tickle your historic taste buds, you can then feel the ancient past at Machree Moor. If you walk around a kilometre from the main road, you will be led into this intriguing prehistoric site. Six stone circles can be made out in total, including one with huge sandstone blocks up to 5.5 meters high. Others are constructed from smaller granite rocks. There are also remains of burial chambers, hut circles, and ancient field systems to discover. It is thought that the site was used for ceremonial purposes around 4,500 years ago, with the visible stone circles dating back to 2000 BC. As they stand in open moorland and require a short walk to get there, you can often find yourself alone amongst the stones, which just adds something to the atmosphere. Whilst on Arran, you may find yourself hearing a rut near the village of Lochranza. This village of Lochranza, on the northwest coast of the island, is home to a herd of red deer that seem completely immune to the disturbance of people. Happily munching away on grass, or obligingly posing in front of the castle. As a matter of fact, they can sometimes be a hazard to the nearby golf course because they don't tend to listen to the shouts of four. Bear in mind though, these deer are not tame and shouldn't be voluntarily approached or fed. Their wildness does become more apparent during this autumnal rut, when it can be enchanting or terrifying, perhaps both, to hear the stags roaring and barking. It depends on where you're hearing this from, either the comfort of your hotel or B&B bed, or practically in the action if you're in your tent. wander around the coast, and you'll be able to watch for a spider at King's Cave. The King's Cave is a dramatic sea cave, now above high tide level, on the west coast of the island. It was here that Robert the Bruce was said to have had his famed encounter with the spider following a series of defeats, and from it he gained his resolve to try and try again, ultimately winning Scottish independence at the Battle of Bannockburn, which of course you all know about. For those who may not be so familiar with the tale, it is claimed that Robert Bruce hid out in this cave, completely dejected, after his disastrous first year as King of Scots. Legend tells us that, whilst waiting out the winter in the year 1306, he watched a spider on the cave wall try time and time again to spin its web. And every time the spider fell, it rose to begin again. And it was this that inspired Bruce to pursue his legacy. Several other Scottish caves also claim to be the site of this legend, but the King's Cave is the finest of them. You can enjoy the fine coastal setting on the approach, taking a torch to enable you to seek out the ancient carvings inside, including one of a cross, horse, and a deer. Journeying back over to the east coast of the island, you can visit Brodick Castle. An imposing Scots baronial pile, Brodick Castle stands on the site of a much earlier fortress from the 5th century. The current elegant country house is today owned by the National Trust for Scotland. But don't let its more recent history fool you. It is said to be haunted by no less than three ghosts, including a grey lady who apparently perished in the castle's dungeon, having been left to starve there as she was suffering from the plague. You can explore the surrounding country park and its trails, and also be sure to seek out the 12-sided Bavarian summer house, beautifully lined with pine cones. There was a time when much of Arran was turned over to deer and became a sporting estate. And as a result, a high number of local people were cleared from the interior of the island. Almost as a memorial to this time, in the tiny hamlet of Catacole are 12 houses. Now this attractive row of houses was built as part of an attempt to encourage the farmers to look to fishing for a new livelihood. Each top floor window is a different shape, the idea being that a wife could summon her husband back from sea by lighting a candle in the window of their own house. The reality is that most people who had been evicted from their original houses left the island. But this row of cottages remains as a memorial to this time of change. The Isle of Bute. The Isle of Bute is situated just north of the Isle of Arran, and you can ferry cross from one to the other. These days, the Isle of Bute is undergoing something of a revival as visitors once again come to cherish the Victorian elegance of the main settlement, Rothsay, and the charming scenery of this green and fertile island. Long established as a day trip destination for Glasgow folk who packed steamers on the Clyde in the first half of the 19th century, and as a holiday home for the rich industrialists who built fancy villas on the seafront, it retains an old-world charm, giving the illusion of remoteness while actually being within quite easy reach. With a population of just over 6,000 people-ish, it manages to retain that friendly island feel. To visit the Gothic Mount Stuart is essential on Bute. Prepare for a sensory feast at this Gothic Revival extravaganza of a mansion built in the late 1870s. This house is the ancestral home of the Stuarts of Bute, scions of Robert the Bruce, by virtue of being descended from the illegitimate son of King Robert II of Scotland. The current house replaces one which burnt down and is an incredible feast of ornate carvings, marble colonnades, a star-studded ceiling, a huge tapestry, and spires and turrets carved from red stone. It's definitely worth taking your time and seeking out the animals hiding amongst the carved foliage on the decorated wood panelling which adorns many of the rooms, all differently and expertly crafted by hand. The house also incorporates the trappings of modernity and is said to have been the very first house to have an indoor heated swimming pool. Though I don't know about you, but I think the Romans might have something to say about that. But who's asking them? And apparently it was also the first Scottish home to boast electric lighting, in addition to a lift and a telephone system. Extensive grounds are well worth exploring also, with beautiful formal gardens giving way to a landscaped parkland with a variety of walks. But not only is there just Mount Stuart to tantalise your architectural taste buds, the extensive and atmospheric ruins of St. Blaine's Church offer similar intrigue. These are often visited in the first circular stage of the West Island Way, or by a short ramble from the road. Most of the remains that you can see date back to 1100 AD. But the site was a very early Christian monastery, established by Saint Catan back as far as 500 AD. Saint Blaine was his nephew and began his spiritual life here and at Kingarth. In addition to the church ruins, remnants of the community that once served the religious buildings also survive, including a well and the remains of a manse. Another beautiful place on Bute is a place called Ettrick Bay. This mile-long expanse of sand makes Ettrick Bay the most popular beach on Bute. But it never feels crowded. Over the years, I have many fond memories of gently rambling across the sands, enjoying the cheeps of seabirds, and being soothed by the lapping waves which roll in off the Atlantic. But interestingly, in contrast to the peaceful scenes of today, these sands were used as one of a number of training grounds for the D-Day landings during the Second World War. But if you would like to feel a wilder feeling beach, you could head to Stravanan Bay in the south of the island. It does lie on the West Island Way, and it is possible to visit it as part of a circular walk from Kilchatan Bay, also visiting a prehistoric stone circle. The small isles of Little Cumbrae, Ilse Craig, and Davar Island. Known locally as Wee Cumbrae, this small rocky island lies less than a kilometre from its larger sibling, and boasts a lighthouse, farm, and palatial early 20th century mansion with gardens, designed by Gertrude Jekyll. The island is privately owned, and yoga retreats are run from the house for those feeling a little stiff. Little Cumbrae even has its own tiny island sibling, Castle Island, complete with impressive tower castle. But this island is only accessible at low tide. The volcanic plug of Ilse Craig rises dramatically from the sea, some 14 kilometres out from the Ayrshire coast. It's positioned about halfway between Belfast in Northern Ireland and Glasgow, and has earned itself the nickname Paddy's Milestone. Physically in appearance, it has a domed summit and is certainly an impressive viewpoint. Thankfully, these days, the island is now a bird nature reserve. However, the smooth granite has lent itself to be the source of well over half of the world's curling stones. So next time you see the Winter Olympics, there's a 50-50 chance that that round slidey pebble came from the island of Ailsa Craig. There are many other signs of man's existence here. From early habitation in the caves of the island, the remains of a 16th century castle built to deter Spaniards from grabbing the strategic island, and more recently, a lighthouse with four keepers' cottages, which were occupied until the light was automated in 1990. Just for your information, day passenger trips to Ailsa Craig do run daily, especially in the summer months. Landing on the island and the amount of time you'll get on it does obviously depend on the sea conditions and the tides. If you do make it to the island, you may want to climb the crag. The very steep and strenuous climb to the summit is rewarded with breathtaking views and a head-spinning sensation of being in the air, as it's impossible to see the coastline of Ailsa Craig from its bun-like shaped summit. Reaching the top is a challenge, which should definitely not be underestimated. If you're going to do it, it's definitely best to go early in the season, before the bracken completely obstructs the lower half of the route to the top. But not only this, but the swathes of bluebells can also be slippery underfoot. Don't ask me how I know. The path starts near a square bothy at the base of the cliffs and takes a diagonal line to reach quite a broad shelf and the ruins of the castle. From here, the gradient steepens and only a trace of a path continues heading uphill, eventually petering out before the trig point marks the highest point that you can reach. Unsurprisingly, from up there, also on a clear day, you can pretty much see Ireland as well, as neighbouring Arran's and Kintyre's and Butte. Now on the far side of the crag, you can see the impressive gannet trees and other seabird colonies, mainly nesting on the high cliffs. A few puffins also now nest here, following the eradication of rats in 1991. The water is also the best place to view the massive foghorns, one in the south and one in the north of the island. Built in 1866 and initially powered by compressed air, they warned ships of the notorious shipwreck spot for 100 years. From the sea, you can see the almost inaccessible Swine Cave, supposedly where original inhabitants of the crag sheltered their pigs during bad weather. It's also said to have been used by smugglers. Davar Island is a tiny little island linked by a natural tidal causeway to the Kintyre Peninsula near Campbelltown. Its strategic position led to a lighthouse being built in 1854. A lookout building was added nearby to overlook the anti-submarine nets that protected Campbelltown during the Second World War. Walking to Davar is an adventure in itself, as the shingle causeway known as Am Dorlin is only exposed for around 3 hours either side of a low tide. So just be warned, if you're going to go over, check the tide tables or ask somebody nearby. Otherwise you'll be sleeping next to the sheep. Once you are over to the island, you can pay your respects at the Crucifixion Cave. Keep to the right to head towards the high cliffs on the south side of the island. You will pass a number of sea caves, and some of which are definitely worth a quick explore. But the one that you are aiming for is very special due to a painting discovered by fishermen in 1887 and thought at the time to be the work of God. In fact, the large rendering of Jesus on the cross had been painted in secret by a local school art teacher named Archibald MacKinnon. The work has been repainted many times, and the task is usually being undertaken by the art teacher at Campbelltown School itself.